go to physical worlds which resemble those planets where they incarnate life around. Dr. Newton, go on. S, we can experiment with creation and see it developing here. It's as if you were in a lab where you can form physical things from your energy. Dr. Newton, do these physical things resemble what you might see on Earth? I? S, yes, only on Earth. That's why I am here. Dr. Newton, start with your arrival on Earth too and explain to me what your soul does first. S, balks at my question and then finally says, I'm not very good. Note, since this subject is experiencing resistance, I take a few minutes for reconditioning and end with the following. On the count of three, you will feel more relaxed about telling me what you and it is consider appropriate for my knowledge. 1, 2, 3. I repeat my question. S, I look to see what I am supposed to make on the ground in front of me. Then I mold the object in my mind and try and create the same thing with small doses of energy. The teachers assist us with control. I'm supposed to see my mistakes and make corrections. Dr. Newton, who are the teachers? S, Idis and Molkafjil, subject's highly advanced guide, and there are other instructors around. I don't know them very well. Dr. Newton, try to be as clear as possible. What exactly are you doing? S, we form things. Dr. Newton, living things is to transform things by mixing what I am given. I play with the frequency and dosages of my energy. It's tricky, but not too complicated. Dr. Newton, not complicated. I thought nature did those things. S, laughs, who do you think nature is? Dr. Newton, well, who creates the basic elements of your experiments? The primary substance is of physical matter. S, the maker, and those creating on a grander scale than me. Dr. Newton, well, in a sense you are creating inanimate objects such as rocks. S, it's more are trying to copy what we see in front of us, what we know. As an afterthought, I'm getting into plants but I can't do them yet. S, that's it. We copy things and compare them against the original so we can make larger models. Dr. Newton, and you start small, experimenting until you get better. Dr. Newton, this all sounds like souls playing as children in a sandbox with toys. S, smiles, we are children. Directing an energy flow resembles the sculpturing of clay. Dr. Newton, are the other members of this creative training class from your original cluster group? S, some are. Most come from all over the spirit world, but they have all incarnated on Earth. Dr. Newton, does everyone make the same things as you do? S, well, of course, some of us are better with certain things, but we help each other. The teachers come around and give us tips and advice on how to improve, but, stops, Dr. Newton, but, what? S, sheepishly, if I am clumsy and do a bad job, I disassemble some creations without showing them to Idis. Dr. Newton, give me an example. S, plants. I don't apply my energy delicately enough to produce the proper chemical conversions. Dr. Newton, you are not good with the formation of plant life. S, no, so I undo my abominations. Dr. Newton, is this what you mean by uncreation? You can destroy energy. S, energy can't be destroyed. We reassemble it and start over using different combinations. Dr. Newton, I don't see why the creator needs your help in creating. S, for our benefit. We participate in these exercises so that when our work is judged to be of quality, hopefully we can make real contributions to life. Dr. Newton, if we are all working up the ladder of development as souls, Nentham, I am left with the impression the spirit world is one huge organizational pyramid with a supreme authority of power at the top. S, sighs, no, you are wrong. It is not a pyramid. We are all threads in the same long piece of fabric. We are all woven into it. Dr. Newton, it's hard for me to visualize fabric when there are so many levels of competency for souls. S, think oh you do. But consider us moving across, Dr. Newton, I always think of souls moving up in their existence. Dr. Newton, give me something I can picture in my mind. S. It's as if we are all part of a universal train on a flat track of existence. Most of the souls on Earth are in one car moving along the track. Dr. Newton, are all other souls in different cars? S. Yes, but all on the same track. Dr. Newton, where are the conductors such as it is? S. They move back and forth between the connected cars, but sit closer to the engine. Dr. Newton, where is the engine? S. The maker? Up front, naturally. Dr. Newton, can you see the engine from your car? S. Laughs at me, no. But I can smell the smoke. I can feel the engine rumbling along and I can hear the motor. Dr. Newton, it would be nice if all of us were closer to the engine. S. Ultimately, we will be. I have found it is not necessary for souls to go to physical worlds when they begin using their energy in life creation training. Apparently, these exercises begin in group settings where souls find it easier to pool their energy with each other and their instructor. A subject explained the process this way. When I started, my group formed a circle around Senwa, guide. Collectively, we had to practice so hard to harmonize our thoughts and fine-tune our ability to all focus on one thing with the same intensity. One time we were working on a tree leaf after Senwa demonstrated how it should appear in front of us. As we directed our beams of energy for texture, color, and shape, we kept messing up. We weren't unified, so a small part of the leaf did not have the proper veining and pigmentation. I am very serious and kind of a perfectionist in my studies, but Nemai, the group jokester, was deliberately alternating his energy the wrong way to screw up the experiment for laughs and because he was tired of the lesson. We finally got him to behave and completed the assignment. From what I am able to determine, souls are expected to individually work with the forces of creation by the time they are solidly established in level 3. Exposure to plant photosynthesis takes place before student souls work up the organic scale of life. I am told that early creation training consists of souls learning relationships between substances to develop the ability of unifying their energy with different values in the elements. The formation of inanimate to animate objects from the simple to the complex is a long, slow process. Students are encouraged to create miniature planetary microhabitats for a given set of organisms which can adapt to certain environmental conditions. With practice comes improvement, but not until they approach level V do my clients begin to feel they might actually contribute to the development of living things. We will hear more about this with case 23. Some souls seem to have a natural gift for working with energy in their creation classes. My cases indicate ability in creation assignments does not mean a soul is at the same level of advancement in all other areas of the spiritual curricula. A soul may be a good technician in harnessing the forces of creation, but lack the subtle techniques of a competent guide. Perhaps this is why I have been given the impression that the highly advanced soul is allowed to specialize. In the previous chapter, I explained some benefits of soul solitude and the last case gave us another example. Spiritual experience is not easily translated into human language. Case 22 talks about the world of altered time as a means of transient planetary study. To someone in trance, it is the timeless mental world that is true reality while all else is an illusion created for various benefits. Other subjects at about the same level call this sphere the space of transformation or simply rooms of recreation. Here, I'm told, souls are able to meld their energy into animate and inanimate objects created for learning and pleasure. One subject said to me, I think of what I want and it happens. I know I'm being assisted. We can be anything familiar to our past experiences. For instance, souls can become rocks to capture the essence of density, trees for serenity, water for a flowing cohesiveness, butterflies for freedom and beauty and whales for power and immensity. People deny these actions represent former earthly transmigrations. I have also learned souls may become amorphous without substance or texture and totally integrate into a particular feeling, such as compassion, to sharpen their sensitivity. Some subjects tell of being mystical spirits of nature, including figures I associate with folklore, such as elves, giants and mermaids. Personal contact with strange mythological beasts are mentioned as well. These accounts are so vivid it is hard for me to simply label them as metaphoric. Are the old folk tales of many races pure superstition, or manifestations of shared soul experience? I have the sense that many of our legends are the sympathetic memories of souls carried from other places to Earth long ago. 11. The advanced soul. People who possess souls which are both old and highly advanced are scarce. Although I haven't had the opportunity to regress many blues in level V, they are always stimulating to work with because of their comprehension and far-reaching spiritual consciousness. The fact is, a person whose maturity is this high doesn't seek out a regression therapist to resolve life plan conflicts. In most cases, level Vs are here as incarnated guides. Having mastered the fundamental issues most of us wrestle with daily, the advanced soul is more interested in making small refinements towards specific tasks. We may recognize them when they appear as public figures, such as a Mother Teresa. However, it is more usual for the advanced soul to go about their good works in a quiet, unassuming manner. Without displaying self-indulgence, their fulfillment comes from improving the lives of other people. They focus less on institutional matters and more on enhancing individual human values. Nevertheless, level Vs are also practical, and so they're likely to be found working in a cultural mainstream which allows them to influence people and events. I have been asked if most people who have coping skills. Most prominent is their exceptional insight. This is not to say life has no karmic pitfalls for them, otherwise the level V probably wouldn't be here at all. They may be found in all walks of life, but are frequently in the helping professions or combating social injustice in some fashion. The advanced soul radiates composure, kindness, and understanding toward others. Not being motivated by self-interest, they may disregard their own physical needs and live in reduced circumstances. The individual I have chosen to represent the level V soul is a woman in her mid-30s who works for a large medical treatment facility specializing in chemical substance abuse. I was introduced to this woman by a colleague who told me of her skill in guiding recovering drug addicts into an improved state of self-awareness. At our first meeting, I was struck by the woman's expression of serenity while surrounded by chaotic emergencies at her place of employment. She was tall and excessively thin, with flaming red hair which stuck out in all directions. Although warm and friendly, there was about her an air of impenetrability. Her clear, luminous. I felt she was looking into rather than at me. My colleague suggested the three of us have lunch because this woman was interested in my studies of the spirit world. She told me that she had never been hypnotically regressed, but there was the sense of a long spiritual genealogy through her own meditations. She thought our meeting was no accident on her own learning path, and we came to an agreement to explore her spiritual knowledge. A few weeks later, she arrived at my office. Clearly, this woman had no compelling desire for a long chronology of past life history. I decided to get a brief sketch of her earliest lives on Earth to use as a springboard into superconscious memories. She rapidly entered into a deep trance and made instant contact with her inner self. Almost at once, I found this woman's span of incarnations staggering, going far back into the distant past of human life on Earth. Touching on her earliest memories, I came to the conclusion her first lives occurred at the beginning of the last warm interglacial period, which lasted from 130,000 to 70,000 years ago, before the last great ice age spread over the planet. During the warmer climate of the middle Paleolithic period of Earth's history, my subject described living in moist, sub-tropical savannas near hunting, fishing, and plant-gathering areas. Later, some 50,000 years ago, when continental sheets of ice had again changed Earth's climate, she spoke of living in caves and enduring bitter cold. Leaping rapidly over large blocks of time, I found her physical appearance changing from a slightly bent to a more erect posture. As we moved forward in time, I directed her to look into pools of water and feel her body while reporting back to me. Her sloping forehead became more vertical over thousands of years in different bodies. Supraorbital ridges above the eyes grew less pronounced, as did body hair and the massive jaws of archaic man. In her many lives as both men and women, I was given enough information on habitat, the use of fire, tools, clothes, food, and ritualistic tribal practices for rough anthropological dating. Paleontologists have estimated Homo erectus, an ape-like ancestor of modern humans, appeared at least 1.7 million years ago. Have souls been incarnating on Earth for this long, utilizing the bodies of these primitive bipeds we call hominids? A few of my more advanced clients declare that highly advanced souls who specialize in seeking out suitable hosts for young souls evaluated life on Earth for over a million years. My impression is these examiner souls found the early hominid brain cavity and restricted voice box to be inadequate for soul development earlier than some 200,000 years ago. Archaic Homo sapiens, whom we call humans, evolved several hundred thousand years ago. Within the last 100,000 years, we find two clear signs of spiritual consciousness and communication. These are burial practices and ritualistic art, as found in carved totems and rock drawings. There is no anthropological evidence that these practices existed on Earth before Neanderthal peoples. Souls eventually made us human, not the reverse. One of my advanced subjects remarked, "Souls have seeded the Earth in different cycles. A composite of information collected from a wide range of clients suggests to me that the land masses we know today deviate from earlier continents, drowned, perhaps, by cataclysmic volcanic or magnetic upheavals. For instance, the Azores in the Atlantic Ocean have been said to represent the tops of mountains of the submerged continent of Atlantis. Indeed, I have had subjects discuss being in ancient lands on Earth that I cannot identify with modern geography. Thus, it is possible souls existed in bodies more advanced than Homo erectus, who died out about a quarter of a million years ago, with the fossilized evidence hidden from us today by geological change. However, this hypothesis means the physical evolution of humans was an up-down-up affair, which I think is unlikely. I now moved my subject into an African life around 9,000 years ago, which she said was an important milestone in her advancement. This was the last life she was to spend with her guide, Kimara. Kimara was an advanced soul herself at the time of this life, counseling a benevolent tribal chief as his influential wife. I tentatively located their land as the highlands of Ethiopia. Apparently, my subject had known Kimara in a number of earlier lives covering thousands of years during Kimara's final incarnations on Earth. Their association in human form ended when my subject died, saving Kimara's life on a riverboat, by throwing herself in front of an enemy spear. Full of love, Kimara still appears to this subject as a large woman, with skin of polished mahogany and a shock of white hair crowned by a headdress of feathers. She is practically nude, except for a strip of animal hide around her ample middle. On Kimara's neck hangs a garish bunch of multi-colored stones, which she sometimes jiggles in my subject's ear to get her attention during dreams in the middle of the night. Kimara teaches by a technique of flashing symbolistic memories of prior lessons already learned in past lives. Old solutions to problems are mixed with new hypothetical choices in the form of metaphoric picture puzzles. By these means, Kimara tests her students' considerable storehouse of knowledge during meditations and dreams. I glanced at my watch. There was no more time for background information if I was going to allow for exploration of this woman's afterlife experiences. Rapidly I took her into superconsciousness, anticipating some interesting spiritual disclosures. She would not disappoint me. Case 23. Dr. Newton. What is your spiritual name? S. Thies. S. For me, yes. S. A glowing fragment of light. Dr. Newton, what exactly is the color of your energy? S. Sky, blue. Dr. Newton, does your light have flecks of another color in it? S. Pause, some gold, not much. Dr. Newton, how about Kumara's energy color? S. It's violet. Dr. Newton, how does light and color identify the quality of a soul's spiritual attainment? S. The intensity of mental power increases with the darker phases of light. Dr. Newton, and your spiritual guide kept her African name of Kumara? Dr. Newton, what do you look like in the spirit world? Dr. Newton, where does the highest intensity of intelligent light energy originate from? S. The knowledge by which the energy of darker light is extended to us comes from the source. Our light is attached to the source. Dr. Newton, when you say source, you mean God. S. That word has been misused. S. By too much personalizing, which makes the source less than it is. Dr. Newton, how? Dr. Newton, what's wrong with us doing that? S. It takes the liberty of making the source too human, although we are all part of its oneness. Dr. Newton, Thies, I want you to reflect on the source as we talk about other aspects of soul life and the spirit world. Later, I will ask you more about this oneness. Now, let's go back to the energy manifestations of souls. Why do spirits display two black glowing cavities for eyes when not showing their human forms? It seems so spooky to me. S. laughs and is more relaxed. That's how Earth's legends of ghosts came about, from these memories. Our energy mass is not uniform. The eyes you speak of represent a more concentrated intensity of thought. Dr. Newton, well, if the myths about ghosts are not so fanciful after all, then these black eye sockets must be useful extensions of their energy. S. Rather than eyes, they are windows to old bodies, and all the physical extensions of former selves. This blackness is a concentration of our presence. We communicate by absorbing the energy presence of each other. Dr. Newton, when you return to the spirit world, do you have energy contact with other souls who may look like ghosts? S. Yes, and appearance is a matter of individual preference. Of course, there is always a multitude of thought waves around me, mingling with my returning energy. But I avoid too much contact. Dr. Newton, why? S. It is not necessary for me to make attachments here. I will be alone for a while to contemplate and sort out any mistakes from my last incarnation, before talking to Kumara. Note, this statement is typical of advanced souls returning to the spirit world, mentioned earlier in Case 9. However, this soul is so advanced she will have no deliberations with her guide until much later, and upon her request. Dr. Newton, perhaps we should talk about older souls for a minute. Does Kumara incarnate on Earth anymore? S. No, she doesn't. Dr. Newton, do you know others like Kumara who were here during the early times on Earth and don't come back anymore? S. Cautiously, a few. Yes, many got on Earth early and got off before I came. Dr. Newton, did any stay? S. What do you mean? Dr. Newton, advanced souls who keep coming back to life on Earth when they could stay in the spirit world. S. Oh, you mean the sages? Dr. Newton, yes. The sages, tell me about them. This is a new term for me, but I often pretend to know more than I do with advanced souls to elicit information. S. With admiration, they are the true watchers of Earth, you know, to be here and keep watch over what is going on. Dr. Newton, as highly advanced souls who continue to incarnate? S. Yes. Dr. Newton, don't the sages get tired of still hanging around Earth? S. They choose to stay and help people directly because they are dedicated to Earth. Dr. Newton, where are these sages? S. Wistfully, they live simple lives. I first came to know some of them thousands of years ago. Today it's hard to see them. They don't like cities much. Dr. Newton, are there many of them? S. No, they live in small communities, or out in the open, in the deserts and mountains, in simple dwellings. They wander about, too, Dr. Newton, how does one recognize them? S. Sighs, most people don't. They were known as the oracles of truth in earlier times on Earth. Dr. Newton, I know this sounds pragmatic, but wouldn't these old, highly developed souls be more useful helping humankind in positions of international leadership rather than being hermits? S. Who said they were hermits? They prefer to be with the common people who are most affected by the movers and shakers. Dr. Newton, what is the feeling one gets when meeting a sage on Earth? S. You feel a special presence. Their power of understanding and the advice they give you is so wise. They do live simply. Material things mean nothing to them. Dr. Newton, are you interested in this sort of service, Thies? S. No, they are saints. I welcome the time when I can stop incarnating. Dr. Newton, perhaps the word sage could also be applied to souls like Kimara, or even with the entities to whom she turns for knowledge? S. Pause. No, they are different, they are beyond the sages. We call them the Old Ones. Note, I would place these beings beyond level VI. Dr. Newton, are the many Old Ones working with souls at Kimara's level and above? S. I don't think so, compared to the rest of us. But we feel their influence. Dr. Newton, what do you feel in their presence? S. Pensive. A. Concentrated power of enlightenment and guidance. Dr. Newton, could the Old Ones be embodiments of the Source itself? S. It is not for me to say, but I don't think so yet. They must be close to the Source. The Old Ones represent the purest elements of thought, engaging in the planning and arranging of substances. Dr. Newton, could you clarify a bit more what you mean by these highly placed souls being close to the Source? S. Vaguely, only that they must be close to conjunction. Dr. Newton, does Kimara ever talk about these entities who help her? S. To me, only a little. She aspires to be of them, as we all do. Dr. Newton, is she getting close to the Old Ones in knowledge? S. Faintly, she approaches, as I approach her. It is slow assimilating with the Source, because we are not complete. Once the duties of a guide are fully established for the advancing soul, it is necessary for these entities to juggle two balls. Besides completing their own unfinished business with continued, though less frequent, incarnations, they must also help others while in a discarnated state. Thies talks to me about this aspect of her soul life. Dr. Newton, when you are back in the spirit world and come out of your self-imposed isolation, what do you ordinarily do then? S. I join with members of my company. S. 9. Dr. Newton, how many souls are in your company? Dr. Newton, jumping to the next conclusion too quickly, oh, so the 10 of you are a group of souls under the leadership of Kimara? S. No, they are my responsibility. Dr. Newton, then, these 9 entities are students whom you teach? S. You could say that, Dr. Newton, and they are all in one group, cluster, which, I assume, is your company. S. No, my company is made up of 2 different groups. Dr. Newton, why is that? S. They are in different progressions, levels. Dr. Newton, and yet, you are the spiritual teacher for all 9? S. I prefer to call myself a watcher. 3 of my company are also watchers. Dr. Newton, well, who are the other 6? S. Matter of factly, people who don't watch. S. Yes, but the words senior and junior, that portrays us as authoritarian, which we are not. Dr. Newton, I want to clarify this using my terms, if you will, Thies, if you are a senior watcher, 3 of your company must be what I would call junior guides. Dr. Newton, my intention is not to denote rank, for me it is just an easy identification of responsibility. Consider the word senior as meaning an advanced teacher. I would call Kimara a master teacher or possibly an educational director. S. Shrugs, that's okay, I suppose, as long as director doesn't mean dictator. Dr. Newton, it doesn't. Now, Thies, cast your mind to a place where you can see the energy colors of all your company. What do the six souls who are not watchers look like? S. Smiles, dirty snowballs. Dr. Newton, if they are white in tone, what about the rest? S. Pause, well, two are rather yellowish. Dr. Newton, we are one short. What about the ninth member? S. That's an Raz. He is doing quite well. Dr. Newton, describe his energy color. S. He is turning bluish, an excellent watcher, he will be leaving me soon. Dr. Newton, let's go to the opposite end of your company,